We'll proceed with the next case, which is Tanisha Villa versus Sandra Lagrand. Mr. Legner.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Brett Legner. I'm an assistant Illinois attorney general, and I represent Sandra Lagrand in this matter. Your honors, this court should reverse the district court's denial of Lagrand's motion for summary judgment on qualified immunity grounds, because Lagrand had evidence that supported her recommendation that Tanisha Villa be indicated for child abuse. In particular, her investigation revealed circumstantial evidence that placed the time of the injury to the child to the time when Villa was changing the baby's diaper, and she had evidence that indicated that the type of injury that occurred here could occur during a diaper change. Turning first to the jurisdictional issue in this matter, which I think merits some discussion. This court has jurisdiction over this interlocutory appeal from the denial.
Let me just go back to what you just, what I think you just said. Does that mean that such a fracture can occur in the course of moving a baby's legs during a diaper change, even absent excuse? Abuse or neglect?
It means that, that's a good question. That would sort of depend on, I guess, probably the totality of the circumstances that are necessary to look at, under the department's rules for the abuse or neglect determination. What was clear was that for this type of spiral fracture on a leg, there has to be a lot of torque. And one circumstance where that could happen is during a diaper change.
I mean, what evidence is there that Villa engaged in actions other than what could be expected during a diaper change?
Well, the evidence was that she was doing a diaper change,
right.
and at that time this injury occurred.
Right.
At that point, that's all the evidence. At that point, that was what the investigation revealed. The investigation did not reveal what exactly Villa did at that time.
See, because I found it a bit problematic that in the brief you're arguing that we shouldn't consider that the evidence that the child was out of sorts for 2 days.
Well, I'm not arguing that you shouldn't consider that evidence. I'm arguing that the standard that we're operating here, which, as the court explained, was whether there was any evidence at all that would support an indication, indicated that, there was evidence that would support that. Now, certainly there was countervailing information, and as I'm sure you're aware, this is an investigation to child abuse or neglect. So there's going to be, evidence on both sides, and there's going to be countervailing information, and it's up for the investigator, to use her judgment and make a call, the best one that she can.
Some doctor apparently testified that this could occur during its diaper change. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Is the doctor an expert in changing diapers, or...? Qualifications?
I don't think the doctor was qualified as an expert in changing diapers, and necessarily, that's not to say
I'm not sure I understand why he would be an expert.
What happened was, and when the doctor made that statement, was as part of the investigation, and the doctor was reviewing progress notes, reviewing the injury, and was sort of was speculating as the type of the doctor does know how. This type of fracture, I guess, could occur. The doctor had seen enough injuries in small children to understand the nature of a spiral fracture and to understand that, the type of torque that happens.
You have to twist the leg to produce the injury.
Yeah, and here we have a six-month-old baby who had basically just learned to turn over, who was arguably fussy, who perhaps was not properly positioned on the table, who might have turned during the change, and the leg was wrenched. I think that's why the doctor speculated that this could occur during a diaper change, because the baby can be moving around.
You sound like you're arguing their case.
I'm arguing that I don't think so, Your Honor, because the point is, and we don't disagree, that there was evidence that indicated that, you know, perhaps it didn't happen then or whatever, but that's not the point.
Was this determination made solely on the basis that Villa was the one with her when the injury was discovered?
Well, a combination of the fact that Villa was with her changing her diaper when it was discovered, that this type of injury could occur during a diaper change, and that the baby did not seem to be injured up until that time.
And couldn't a jury then decide that such a determination is arbitrary, where the injury isn't visible and a child was fussy over two days?
No, not in this circumstance. In this case, the evidence certainly was that the child was fussy. The child was fussy the day before. They gave the child a teething toy, and then the child was fine. The doctors indicate that being fussy and being sort of pacified by a teething toy is not the kind of pain that a child is going to have when it sustains this type of fracture. The child cried out in obvious pain here. There was evidence on the progress notes that the kinder care employees wrote, you know, on that day, that the baby was sleeping, that the baby took some food, that the baby was having its diaper checked all through that day up until 2 o'clock, and that the baby was essentially fine, you know, maybe a little fussy, but basically fine up until 2. So there is evidence that indicates that something happened at 2 o'clock. There was evidence that indicates that this type of injury could happen during a diaper change. And there was evidence that is indicating that Villa was changing the diaper at 2 o'clock. So it's that sort of totality of the evidence that that means that there was some evidence. And again, this is a very low threshold here. It was just whether there was any supporting evidence at all. And in this type of investigation, rarely are you going to have somebody say, well, I did it, or even I saw somebody do it. That just generally does not happen. Mm-hmm. But what has happened here is they have a general time of the injury, a way that it could have happened, and somebody doing, you know, conduct that could have caused the injury at the time the injury was discovered. And it's that sort of thing that counts as evidence, as any evidence at all, which was the very low standard that we were dealing with here.
What did the district court determine as the deciding factor?
The district court determined that according to the district court, the deciding factor was that Villa did not know of any specific conduct, or that LeGrand did not know of any specific conduct that Villa did. That Villa basically, that LeGrand indicated Villa based on the fact that Villa was with the baby when the injury was discovered.
Okay, and is that enough for I guess. I can't find it here, but the genuine issue of fact as to whether LeGrand indicated Villa without any evidence of abuse or neglect.
Yes, that statement by the district court isn't really. The court was discussing the legal effect of all the facts. I think the court there, as sometimes happens, confused whether there was a genuine issue of material fact with a dispute over the legal effect of the facts. We're not disputing that LeGrand said that, and we're not disputing that LeGrand did not know at the time of the indication what Villa did, what specific act Villa did that caused the injury. We're not disputing that. What is in dispute is the legal effect of that fact with the other facts. In the passage you're quoting from the district court, the court went on to say, and LeGrand presented no evidence to the contrary. To sort of rebut that, and we disagree with that conclusion. We think that the undisputed facts show that there was evidence, but again, the district court isn't pointing out what is actually a dispute over material historical facts. We're taking those facts, you know, in the light most favorable to Villa. We're saying that despite that fact that the court relied on, that Villa did not, or LeGrand did not know what specific conduct Villa did, we still win because there was other evidence that supported the indication. So we disagree with the court's legal conclusion that, that you're quoting, but that disagreement is based on, you know, historical facts that we're not disputing in any way, which in that way, to tie it into McKinney, makes this case different than the genuine issue of fact four in McKinney. Where I see that I'm out of time.
We'll finish your sentence.
Thanks. In McKinney, Officer DuPlain took issue with, the district court had determined that there was some evidence that indicated that McKinney charged DuPlain and DuPlain shot, and there was some evidence that indicated that McKinney did not charge DuPlain and DuPlain shot. The court said, this court said in McKinney that if the argument, if DuPlain's argument on appeal was whether or not McKinney charged and he shot, he would still, there was still no constitutional violation, there would be jurisdiction. The problem was DuPlain argued that the evidence that McKinney did not charge him was not competent, that was not hearsay, and that's something this court cannot get into. What we're saying is we're not arguing that the evidence that, that LeGrand stated that she did not know what specific acts Villa did was not competent. We're taking that. We're saying that despite LeGrand's statement that she did not know what specific conduct that Villa did, and that LeGrand indicated and recommended the indication of Villa based on the circumstantial evidence placing her with the baby and doing the diaper change, we okay. still win.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Doherty?
Good morning, Your Honors. If it please the court and counsel, I don't think they still win. What counsel is arguing in this case is for this court to disregard McKinney and to disregard the decision by Judge Cannelli that there was a question of fact as to whether or not Sandra LeGrand indicated my client, Tanisha Villa, without any evidence whatsoever of abuse or neglect. He looked at and quoted from the cross-examination in the DCFS hearing before the ALJ. That hearing established that Sandra LeGrand had no evidence of abuse, had no evidence of neglect, and that the reason why she indicated my client was because my client was with the baby when the injury was discovered. That is the only reason. And Judge Cannelli concluded that that reason would allow a reasonable jury to find that her constitutional rights were violated, that she did not receive due process, that there was no process whatsoever when the investigator simply indicates her with no evidence of abuse or neglect.
But if there's some evidence that a child can sit in an exercise earlier in the day, that she cried out in pain as Villa was changing the diaper and that she was subsequently found to have a fracture, how can we say there was no evidence on which LeGrand, you know, could find that abuse was indicated?
It's LeGrand's own testimony, Your Honor. This is not Frank hearsay in the Ellis case. This is not some problem with the Daubert evidence of the trajectory of bullets. This is Sandra LeGrand, the investigator, the person who made the determination to indicate my client, saying she had no evidence of abuse simply because she was the last person with the baby my client was indicated. The facts are not that this child was able to go in an exosaucer. I mean, you know, according to McKinney and according to Johnson and according to Leaf and a lot of other cases, we don't want to get into a review of all the evidence, but if you would like, I could recite to you the evidence that is in the record.
What I'm saying is I'm not asking you about her testimony. I'm asking you about evidence. In other words, there was this evidence, the exosaucer, the crying out in pain.
I'd like to address that, Your Honor. The exosaucer, the only testimony about the exosaucer was they tried to put the baby in the exosaucer, and she complained and cried, and they had to take her out. Now, to me, that's isolating the one little fact. They put her in the exosaucer and blown it up into what they wanted to prove, that is, that the baby was fine. The testimony is that this baby was inconsolable for 2 days, not they gave her a teething ring and she was fine. The daycare workers, 5 or 6 other women who were involved with this child's care over a 2-day period, testified that they had to hold this baby in an upright position and had to rock her for the 2 days in order to console her. Now, clearly something was going on with this baby, and it was going on long before 2 o'clock. And the basis for the indication against my client, allegedly, at least from this conversation we've had here today, is that the doctor said, well, it could have happened at 2 o'clock. What the doctor said is it could have happened on the 10th of April, it could have happened on the 11th of April. What the doctor said is, yeah, it could happen in a diaper change, and it could happen in a lot of other situations. And then we're here speculating on what the doctor was speculating on. There was no evidence that anything happened when my client was changing the baby's diaper. Not to mention the fact that my client was observed by a co-worker 4 or 5 feet away during this whole process, and that my client was only with the baby for 15 to 30 minutes of that 2-day period.
Now, is there any evidence that the fracture could have occurred during a diaper change, even absent any improper conduct by someone changing the diaper?
Well, I think that there's medical testimony in the record at the ALJ hearing that indicated that these types of fractures can occur, and people don't even recognize that it did occur, that it isn't necessarily an issue of neglect or it isn't necessarily an issue of abuse. Certainly, those types of things can occur to cause a fracture, but oftentimes parents don't even know that this type of injury occurred while the child was in their care, or the other 6 or 7 other child care workers who were with this baby all during the 10th and all during the 11th up until 1:30 p.m. when my client arrived. And the idea that, well, one of the doctors said, well, gee, if you have this fracture, you wouldn't be consolable at all. Well, that flies in the face of what the facts were. They spent 2 days consoling the baby, and the only way they could do it was rocking her and holding her upright. The facts are when the mother brought the baby to the hospital and to the doctor looked at the baby, makes the notes in his record, and says, well, the baby appears content. The baby is sleeping. So now we already know we have a fracture, and we don't have a baby that's carrying on. So their conclusion that it had to have happened at 2 o'clock because otherwise they would have known before that it happened earlier because of the way the baby was carrying on is just not borne out by the facts. Indeed, there are other incidents that happened that are testified to in the case that demonstrated that this baby was in pain during that time period. They tried to lay her down in a crib, and if you've ever been a parent and you tried to lay down a baby in a crib and they're in pain and they cling to you is what the testimony was. They screamed and clung to her because they did not want to be laid down and the baby didn't want to be laid down in the bed. This is what was going on before my client was even there. At 12 o'clock, they did a diaper change. Again, there was screaming. Again, the other daycare workers said, geez, what's going on with this baby? At that time, they thought it was a diaper rash. But who's to say it wasn't a fractured leg?
Well, the court then, and I ask the other side, as far as your client is concerned, there's the denial of qualified immunity for the other side, your client. It's not, they're still in the case. And what did the judge, what was his focus on the evidence or lack of evidence that he did not give qualified immunity to LeGrand?
Basically, Your Honor, one of the primary things that Judge Kennelly did was he reviewed the testimony from the ALJ hearing. The testimony was by Ms. LeGrand, and it's in his opinion, is, no, I didn't have any evidence of abuse. No, I didn't have any evidence of neglect. And what it really comes down to is I indicated this woman, this girl, Tanisha Vaya, for this charge of child abuse or neglect because she was the one with the child when the injury was discovered. The reality is my client was a 19-year-old girl who had gone to junior college and had worked in a hospital and worked in a preemie ward and was educated in how to investigate whether or not a child was having a problem. And so when she went to change her diaper, she saw that the child reacted to her touching her leg. She called over her coworker, who was 4 feet away and looking at her the whole time and talking to her, and said, "Gee, look at the baby. She's got a problem. I think it's with her leg." And immediately they contacted their supervisors, who immediately called the mother, who immediately came to the daycare center and took the baby to the hospital. And that's when it was discovered.
So the question is, was there any evidence for LeGrand to indicate? And he said that is, I guess that's still a question of fact. Is that where we are?
I don't believe it's a question of fact, but certainly the district court ruled that it's a question of fact based on the evidence that was presented for the court as part of the motion for summary judgment, Your Honor.
Okay.
I'd like to thank the court for your time.
Thank you.
Your time has expired, so this case will be taken under advisement.